Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Alaskan Podcast. At long last, two things. One, my wife, Abby, is now here in Ketchikan full-time, which is great. And we are going to recap her elk and mule deer hunt from last month. Hi.
Hi.
So, as a former resident of Wyoming, you had general tag.
Yep.
Is it an area that we had hunted before? Went down there a couple of years, or was it 2 years ago? No, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Three years ago, we were in that area on the last day of archery season before we went to the spot where you drew the mule deer tag. Mm-hmm. And heard bugles all night. So this is the last day of September. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, heard bugles all night. It was crazy. And then we left to go hunt the mule deer. Didn't see any mule deer. And that was sad.
Yes.
So this year, we go to the same area, but we put up a bunch of game cameras. We had a bunch of awesome bulls there during the summer. And you were checking it up until... When did you pull the game cameras?
I pulled them mid-September after I shot the cow.
Why are you doing that? You just blew up the whole thing. So we have a lot of things on the game camera, and they were still there, so there was no reason why they would have gone anywhere. So Abby went there in September and saw some stuff. And tell about the first encounter that you had with the bull. Like, what program were you running? You were going solo archery at the spot where we'd set up the game camera and seen a bunch of...
Yeah. I mean, my goal for this season, I guess, was to shoot an animal with my bow. So I had a bunch of tags, and I was kind of like, you know, if a mule deer presents itself, I'll shoot it. I had a bull tag for elk. I had a cow tag for elk. And... Yeah, I pretty much had to shoot something with my bow because I was coming up here mid-October, which is before the rifle season. So I went out there early September a couple times, did some calling. Nothing called back, but I must have seen this same bull probably 5 or 6 times. He'd always come in quiet. And he was a nice bull, like a 6x6, had him on the camera. And so, actually, the first time that he came in, I heard him come in. I could hear him breaking sticks and whatnot. And I've never shot anything with my bow, so got really excited when I heard him coming in. And when he was just out of view, he started raking. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then he stepped out at 20 yards, and I didn't have my bow drawn. And I was like, shoot. And he must have seen a little movement or something because he turned and looked at me and just stared at me for, I don't know, it felt like a long time, probably 3 seconds, and then turned and spooked. And I was pretty bummed.
When you were recapping that, you said that, like previously, that you'd heard it coming, but it came faster and yet quieter, so you didn't really have time to draw the bow. So it wasn't like you saw it and then just never drew. It was... All of a sudden, it was there in the open broadside, and you didn't want to spook it.
Yeah, I mean, I just had never thought about, okay, I need to draw my, I guess I knew I needed to draw my bow before he stepped out, but I hadn't processed how that happens. I'd never been that close to an animal holding my bow before. And so then, a few days later, I went out, almost the same exact spot, like probably 30 meters from where I was when I called that bull in.
30 meters?
Yards, whatever.
Oh, no. You're doing science today and everything was in meters?
Yeah. So anyways, calling and this cow starts calling back and I'm excited about it. And so I hear her coming, she's calling. And so I draw super early this time. And I'm standing there holding my bow out, calling, she's coming in. And then I'm like, man, she's still far. I let my bow down. Keep calling, redraw, I'm calling. By the time she steps out, this broadside shot, I can't even aim the bow. I'm shaking so bad. So I let the bow down. And she doesn't spook. She just stares at me 15 yards away. So I wait as long as I think I can, which is probably like 4 seconds. Redraw the bow. When I redraw, she spooks, but she only spooks about 10 yards and then she stops and turns back at me. And so I took probably what was a rush shot, and it might have deflected off something too. I kind of heard two hits and it hit something pretty solid. And at first I thought that it had gone through her and hit the tree behind her and I was like all pumped. Then I go over, and there's no arrow, and I'm like, I hit her in the front shoulder for sure. So the next day, that was like pretty close to dark, so I went back out the next day and was able to follow a blood trail maybe for half a mile or so, and then kind of gritted from there, but never found her, never found the arrow, so I don't really know what happened, but I was pretty disappointed. And so, I don't know, after that I just kind of decided I'd kind of cool off on the elk hunting for a little bit and wait for, you were going to come up in a couple weeks anyways, so I figured I'd wait for you to come up and we could hit it hard then.
Yeah, when you were looking for that, you looked that night and the next day you came out with a friend and then we called Jaden and then you talked to Jaden for a while and was describing the blood. You took pictures of the blood and we're following that and spent hours just going around and looking for it. And based on what, like we read some stuff too, just like trying to provide any sort of, well, it sounded like this and it looked like this. And if you see this sort of blood, it probably means this. And based on what Jaden was saying too, and you know, it sounded like it was a non-lethal, especially with how strong those elk are. You know, you see people that have those, you know, videos, or I think it was a Corey Jacobson that like took a bull that had a broadhead that was still like in its not like in its spine or like near the spine. I mean, those things are crazy, crazy strong. But yeah, I know you felt pretty bad, and I felt pretty bad too. I wanted to be there and kind of help you grit out and find what happened, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I think that she probably lived because I went back a few days later and I just looked around for, you know, any birds circling or any kind of indication of, hey, maybe there's a down animal somewhere in here. Because, you know, when you know you've shot an animal, like, you just want closure. You just want to know for sure one way or the other. And so, like, I kind of got over the fact that, like, I probably wounded this cow. And I was like, okay, well, all these animals eventually are going to die, and like, I don't know, it's fine. There's way worse ways to go, but I don't know. There's still that lingering, like,
you feel bad, you feel sad, yeah.
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 The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911, and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So yeah, you took a little bit of break till the end of the month when I was there, and I was super excited just because, like, you got a cow tag and a bull tag. So I was figuring, based on what was happening, and like that 6-point was around, and I thought, well, even if another bull is around, it's totally fine, and there's cows around and they're responding to calls, so it's just gonna be a matter of getting it done and finishing it out. Super excited for you to have that closure. But then it just seemed like nothing. Like the first night we got there, didn't hear anything. I expected to hear something at night because we'd done that a couple years ago, and it was, you know, the last day of September when we were here and stuff, and I was there before that. We still had almost a whole week until the end of the month, so I figured we'd be hearing something at night, but we just weren't hearing anything. Didn't see anything.
Yeah, and it was just such a drastic change. I'd been out, that was like the second week of September when I'd seen all these elk, shot that cow. And, I mean, when I was camping at night, I was hearing bugles every night. When I was, like, they weren't necessarily responding to my calls, but there were a couple times when I kind of walked up on a group of elk and I heard calling before they kind of saw me. None of those things really worked out, but so I just kind of expected that it would still be like that, or that they'd be even more vocal, because second week of September is, I mean, that's early for the rut. And I thought it kind of peaked at the end of the month. But I don't know. I mean, I guess probably because that area gets quite a bit of pressure. It was pretty hot. There was a full moon the week before, so I was kind of expecting we'd at least hear them at night, but did we hear any bugles at all when we were out there?
No, not at all, not a one. And that was the thing, we were trying to use the information we had, that we had read about in YouTube videos and the Elk 101 course, you know, locating elk and listening for bugles, finding bugles, covering ground until you hear bugles, listening at night. And, you know, there are people who listen at night and then, like, what's the term? Pursue like a cougar or go coyote or something like that. So you hear it at night and then you start to make a move a little bit that night. And then, you know, you're at least in the realm, or mm-hmm. you're at least in the area or the vicinity of them, but or didn't hear anything to take that first step of locating and then go from there. We tried raking, calling, bugling, different spots. It was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's crazy, too, that that the first day of October we went out looking for, that's the opener for mule deer for rifle, so we went out looking for mule deer, and we heard that, we saw a herd and a bull, and the bull's bugling, the cows are calling.
Yeah.
It's like they know it's October 1st, and they're in the clear or something. Yeah. It was crazy. So
we went to that spot day 3. So we spent the first 2 days in that spot. The first day, we ran the circuit around the game cameras because that's where they'd been and that's where you'd seen them. That's where stuff was happening. Mm-hmm. The second day, we decided we're going to put some miles on, and we climbed down into one of those, you know, they talk about nasty holes where the elk will go in or they'll get pushed to. And so we went down this really steep embankment, and we were following kind of this creek. And as we were doing it, I thought, this is not great, because the thermals were not good for us. Because of how, like, the shape of it. If we got down to the creek, then we were fine, but it was kind of like a wind plus the thermal. It kind of blew it along the side of the hill that we were climbing down to. So we couldn't get down to the bottom kind of fast enough to then be able to be underneath them.
The winds were just super inconsistent too. Yeah. Kept changing. Yeah.
So at one point we smelled elk, which was good, but we didn't see a lot of scrapes. We didn't see a lot of fresh sign. We didn't see, you know, like we have been to places where we had smelled them, seen where they had bedded, and just seen the difference between a high traffic area and this place. And it just looked like there may be some straggling animals around, or on the steep parts where you couldn't really access. So we put a lot of miles in that day. It was pretty hot. And then nothing. So then day 3, we drove out that night to a spot to camp and then put on a lot of miles that day. And that day I was pretty confident because the weather had changed. And after seeing how the weather change had impacted the mule deer hunting last year, we didn't see anything. And then it snowed and it was on. We saw them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so there was a little bit of sleet, some rain. We hiked across this little basin and thought that we would get far enough away. But nothing. But you shot a grouse. That was cool.
Yeah, I did shoot a grouse with my bow. Yeah. So that was
good.
Shot something with my bow at least.
Got back to the campsite and cooked it up. It was good. Mm-hmm. No seasoning, but it was good.
It was really good, yeah.
And then next day, we went to the same sort of area, but approached from a different angle. And again, it was just like another, just put miles on it.
Yeah.
And we figured it was going to be an absolutely miserable experience trying to hike it out. But, you know, like, we're not hearing anything. Like, this is what we got to do. So hike way in there, nothing. Didn't smell anything. The wind was more consistently in our favor this time, which mm-hmm. was great, but just no indication there was much around. We did, I dialed back the calling and just kind of did, it was two soft cow calls, just kind of looking if stuff was around, but like no responses, no anything. And it was, I felt really good about that day because the wind was consistently good. The weather had changed. There wasn't a lot of snow, but it was much colder. And just nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, once I kind of realized that my early September strategies weren't going to work, we were like, all right, we're going to cover ground until we find something that's talking. And we just covered a bunch of ground, and we didn't find anything talking. So then I think we kind of went back to our original strategy of... you know, just kind of still hunting, moving slow, calling, waiting a little bit longer to see if something was going to come in quiet. And we did end up seeing three bulls.
Yeah, we went back to the original spot. And as we were hiking in, it was evening.
Yeah.
It's evening. And then all of a sudden, something just takes off.
Yeah.
We were trying to make a kind of looping out to get back to where you had seen the bulls before mm-hmm. and where we'd had the game cameras. And so in that looping, you know, we both were kind of like, this is some really nice territory. And we'd been there before. We hadn't seen anything there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that thing just takes off. I think, dang it.
Yep.
And then we went into that spot, sat, nothing was there. And then the next day we go take an awesome route to get back. We pay attention to the thermals. Like, we got it dialed in now. Our movements are excellent. We get to the backside of this ridge, and we want to time it to where when we come back over, the wind is perfect. So we extra mile and a half or so, extra time, extra care. And we come over, and I called a little bit, waited, nothing. And then... kind of dropping into this spot, and you saw it first.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw a big tan body, and so I froze, and it was a bull and a cow just kind of standing there. The bull's head was kind of obscured by a tree, so I don't know if he actually saw us, but the cow could probably see us. But in retrospect, I should have knocked an arrow and shot. I didn't realize that they were standing there at 35 yards. I was trying to figure out, like, if we could call and get them closer, but that was another...
We'd kind of picked our way around this tree into this open lane, and then, like, our first reaction was, oh, man, we need to get cover.
Yeah.
And so we kind of backed up, and, yeah, I think the first thing would have been to... But you go so long without seeing anything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see something that runs off. And then the next day, you see something that's just there.
Yeah, but that was an opportunity that I needed to convert on.
Yeah.
Because we stared at them for longer than it would have taken me to knock an arrow and draw.
Yeah, it was like...
And, I mean, vitals totally exposed.
Yeah. Hours in, like, hunting time or whatever. I don't know. I wasn't even, I was kind of frozen too. Like, what are we going to do? Like, should I try to call to get it close? Like, what are we, do we need to close the gap more a little bit? But there were a couple of branches in there. And so I could definitely see your hesitation about shooting. I mean, it was pretty exposed, but there are definitely some, and when you're shooting 35 yards, you got to play into where the arrow is going to be at that level of trajectory. And so there was one that was pretty high up on the elk and one that may have been above, but those may have been in play if you actually shot. So like I thought that you were maybe considering all that and you weren't happy with the clearness of the shot. And
I think it was a pretty, all I remember was just big tan.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and I think that was part of why I didn't realize how close it was, because I couldn't see his head. All, like, literally all that was exposed was the vitals.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think, maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I think it would have been a pretty good shot.
I looked through the binos just kind of seeing what was going on there, because I didn't see the cow at first. And so I see big, strong body, and then I'm looking, I'm just, like, it didn't move. I'm pretty sure it was facing us, but it did not move whatsoever, and so branches and sticks all blended in. You couldn't tell what was antler, what was not, but then I was able to kind of focus on and see the change in coloration in the tips of the antlers, and like that's an awesome bull.
Yeah.
But then like kind of what do we do, and then it took off.
Yeah, so that was unfortunate. In retrospect, I would have shot at it, but I mean, I definitely feel like I learned a lot, so that's something. Like,
what's that fine? And we talked about this. Like, it's you have to be ready, but at the same time, you don't want to. What was it? It's like.
Oh yeah, just be launching arrows.
Yeah, you don't want it to go to Western, you know.
Yeah.
Go fast, but not be in a hurry. Like, what is it that? I used to use it when I was coaching basketball. Like, you got to go fast, but don't be in a rush or in a hurry.
Like, have a sense of urgency, but
careless. Yeah. So like, always be ready, but it's hard when you're on edge expecting to see elk for 3 or 4 days and all of a sudden it happens and you don't even get a shot. And then the next day, all of a sudden there's one there broadside. Like, how do you keep your focus for that long when you haven't heard anything? It's not like you've had missed chances or the bull doesn't come in or it starts to come in then hangs up. Like, we're getting none of that. It was absolutely nothing at all. And then see one. Next day, see another one broadside. So, I don't know.
And then the next day, we saw another one that might have also been coming into a call, but just really slow and deliberate, and we ended up spooking him when we started moving.
Yeah. Well, there was about, between the last call and we then moved to this different area, there was probably a good 15, 20 minutes of hiking and moving. So, it may have heard it. Maybe it was coming. I don't know. But we went from kind of like this second growth past its prime logging territory where stuff was growing back and it was pretty thick and kind of gross to the edge of that where there was still some really good timber. So we had to meander through that stuff to get to where the timber was, and there was a little undulation, and we even said, should we call? And I think I said,
I wanted to call and you were like, let's get on top of this ridge. And then,
but then we kept going
on top and we never stopped and called. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there was like a little undulation and then another one. So should we call here? Yeah, let's call.
Yeah.
But then we just kept walking and then we come up, and it was like 65 yards. And part of it, it's like the rear was exposed. The rear quarter was exposed in the front quarter. There was a tree right in the middle and it was 65 and the thing took off when the wind swirled. But, and then that was it. That was the end of our, that was the end of the excitement.
Didn't get an elk, which, man, it was a lot of fun though. I mean, those first couple weeks that I hunted when there was so much activity, like, that was awesome. The week that we had where I felt like we just kind of slogged it out and felt like we got better. I mean, we saw 3 bulls in 3 days, the last 3 days. So we were figuring it out a little bit. But I think just kind of a tough area to hunt. A general unit gets hunted pretty hard.
Yeah. That's all the difference. You can absorb as much stuff. I mean, we talked to Jaden so much, you know, and did the the Elk 101 course and YouTube videos and everything, all free content that we can find online. But, you know, that time in the field ultimately makes the difference. And what are you supposed to do in each moment? Like, you know that you're always supposed to be ready, but at the same time, you know that you're supposed to be patient. So which one do you do in each given moment? And it's that intellectual knowledge versus wisdom, and wisdom is knowing what to do in that given time. And so It was too bad that we didn't have this epic story of, oh, you know, we did our research, we put up game cameras, and you shot an awesome bull. It ended up being, did all the research, put up the game cameras, and then I guess we still have some unfinished business in Wyoming.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I want to go back and hunt the area that's a quota area next to that area.
Yeah.
Because.
Well, yeah, it's going to be expensive now, but yeah, definitely want to, we got to make that happen. Then, mule deer rifle season opens and you shoot an awesome mule deer.
Yeah.
No sweat.
Yeah, that was fun. We'd seen a couple mule deers up there and we were hunting elk, so figured we had one day for the opener, might as well go check it out. And
yeah, in a slightly different spot, but we got it was cold and my feet got wet on the like third or fourth day, and the shoes never dried out because we were just camping the entire time. So your socks are kind of wet, and the next day the shoes are still wet, but because your socks kind of absorb some of the moisture, the next day they're a little bit less wet but still damp and cold. And then hiking in the early morning cold and a little bit of snow the night, or like sleet, or almost to try to do something. And then pretty nice that day, though. A little bit of wind, but not bad. And then get up there and we were going to glass and just look for something, but I don't know. I don't think it was like real skill intuition, but I didn't really feel that spot. I didn't really like it. And we just kind of moved around to a different spot, and all of a sudden we see one.
Yep. Yeah, it was nice to get something. So, even if it wasn't with my bow.
Yeah. Well, it worked out perfect. We were in some brush, and we tried to get you settled, put your pack down, put my pack upright so you could kind of use that as a rest. And then it just wasn't quite right, so we moved you forward a little bit. But there was like two nice ones. And they kind of went behind this bush. And there was the first one kind of came out. And then the one behind it was a little bit bigger. And then the next one came out. And there was a smaller one behind it. So I was kind of losing track of how many there were. I kind of wait for it to turn broadside, but there was no clear shot because there's the other one behind it. So then that one cleared, and the one that you were looking at was there, and it was just like it was crazy how many deer there ended up being, and I was kind of losing track. Then all of a sudden, a nice one came out, and it was broadside. There was nothing behind it, so you made a great shot on that one, and then more just started spooking.
Yeah, after I shot, I mean, based on the number of deer that ran away, I was like, I totally missed. Like, great end to a good fitting end to a fruitless week. That's what I was thinking. Just blow this shot. But no, he didn't go 10 yards.
No, it was good. There was a big clump of brush or a bush right in front of it, and I saw it kind of react a little bit to it, look around, just kind of came right at us, and then I didn't see it again, and I was just so distracted with everything running right and left. I didn't know if that thing took a couple steps and took off. I was positive that you shot it and it was down. But then you see so many deer just going left and right.
And just as we were walking over, just more kept popping up.
Yeah. She didn't shoot. She didn't panic, which was good. Like, well, I think that's the one, and you shoot that, and then all of a sudden you have two down. So that was good. But I walked up and it was an awesome, awesome buck. And so it wasn't what we went for, but just still, like, that would have been a perfect, if we got an elk plus that, it would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
But
I don't think we would have been out hunting if we'd gotten an elk.
Probably not. We'd probably still be packing it. But, yeah, it was nice. Then got it tested for CWD and it was negative. So it's great. And, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
And now we're up here.
Yeah. It does. It makes me want to hunt elk in Alaska.
Makes you want to hunt elk in Alaska, huh?
Well, because I'm not trying to pay $1,000 to go hunt down south.
That's true. But to hunt elk in Alaska, the options are pretty expensive to get there.
Yeah, but like, so the cost is a wash. So you might as well hunt elk in Alaska.
That's true. Unless you have to do a flyout. If you have to do a flyout, then it's addition. Like your flights to get to where you need to be, plus then the flyout to get there is going to...
Right, but like, so, as an Alaska resident, you either pay $1,000 to get your tag down south, or you pay $1,000 for your flight. Mm-hmm. Maybe. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. I really like the change of pace. It's nice to be able to walk through the forest and not have it be so just thick and brushy. Like, it's just not thick down there. Like, you have some branches that are kind of in your way, but you can kind of maneuver your way around them. And it's difficult to get really open shots, but you can weave your way so easily. Down here, it's just so thick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
It's a lot nicer now because all the leaves have fallen off the bushes. So it's easier to kind of get around. It's not quite as just gross. You can find better lines and better footing. But it is nice to hunt somewhere else and just have a whole different program and kind of that dry cold and that elevation and just different scenery. And you can actually glass because we're not going to be glassing up here for rut. It's going to be you're going through the woods, you're making calls, you're going to musk eggs and working the edges. It's not a sit on top of a mountain and look for something emerging for the from the timber just before sunset. It's,
yeah. Well, I think that's also why I want to get better at calling bucks in the rut up here. Because just that, like, the anticipation when you, like, bugle or cow call for an elk and you're, like, just kind of sitting there, like, waiting to hear branches breaking and something coming or something about it is just so, like, you feel like around any tree trunk you're going to see an elk.
Yeah.
And, like, I think you could do that with black-tailed deer up here, but...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's just not as common, or there's not as much on the internet about it.
Well, yeah, there's not a lot on the internet about it, which is one thing. And then second thing is they're going to be a lot more quiet when they come in because
it's true,
typically you're calling a doe, and then the buck is on its way, too.
Well, but that's like the grunt tubes. You can do the challenge kind of...
Yeah, you can do that. And then same thing with rattling.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot more, it's just quieter and you don't have the same, like, I kind of want to try a two-person setup like they do with elk.
Mm-hmm.
But that is so dependent upon an elk that you know is in a certain direction. And then you adjust based on where the elk is coming in from. Whereas we could get set up, and we should try this just to see. But I envision me being close to the edge of a musk egg and you behind me trying to pull something out. And something coming right to, like, your right or left and just coming right into you. I think that would probably be a pretty likely.
I'll just duck and then you can.
Yeah. Because I've had that happen where I'm at this musk egg and I'm calling out into it. And all of a sudden, like, something behind me. And the wind is even good. Like, the wind is going right into my face, going right behind me. And I hear the buck come in from behind me. I'm like, dude, what in the world? But, yeah, it's. And then the subtlety of like the grunts, it just sounds like a frog.
Hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, people have, you know, bucks come charging in rather than just walking in, and you have, you know, more intense, I almost said bugle, but grunts, and you have raking, and you have all that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty fun, pretty different, but. Some of the best days to go are when it's going to be really nasty, and it's going to be nasty this weekend. So it might be more of like a rifle than archery, because if it's blown in 35, probably not good for archery. But you can kind of get around stuff a lot easier. Harder to hear them come in, but you can also sneak up on areas that you think are good, those muskeg edges, pretty easily. But so we'll see.
Yeah.
And then try to figure out, based on traffic, there are some areas where people have been calling for the last month. So, like, are the does going to be call shy, or did they not care until now, or did the bucks not care? Because if the bucks didn't care, then they might not be as call shy. But some of these areas, some of the calls that people do, I've heard, I was in one spot, and it just sounded like just a hellish shriek, like a predator call. And I saw a doe running, like, in the opposite direction, because the person was, like, walking through the muskeg and just call, and I was just kind of quiet, and then just see it run the other way, just hauling. And I thought, oh, sweet, the buck's going to be right behind it, but there was no buck. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm cautious about using a call just because I don't want to treat it like a magic wand. Like, number one, hunt well, you know, be quiet, you know, look around, do all those things correctly, and then use the call as kind of like the finisher, rather than just go full speed to the edge of a muskeg, ignoring everything, and then just hoping that you bring it in. So, but we'll see. Oh, yep. You got anything else?
No, I think that covers it.
All right. We have elk leftovers for dinner, so that'll be good. All right. Thanks for listening. I usually don't do any sort of closer outro, whatever it's called. Make sure you go to themediocrealaskan.com. Check out books are available there. Also available on Amazon. I got some stickers too. And, 5-star review. Just leave me a 5-star review. Leave a comment.
If they leave you a review, you can't tell them a 5-star review.
Well, doesn't everybody else talk about leaving 5-star reviews? Or do they just say,
leave a review?
Well, aren't you supposed to tell your audience what you want? Hey, leave a 5. If you feel
if they hate your podcast and they have suggestions, like, you want to know.
It's true. But, yeah, it's true. If you've listened this long into this podcast, hopefully it's higher than 3, right? I would hope.
Probably the rating is going down the longer we sit here and talk.
I don't know. Maybe they'll respect the honesty. But thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Talk to you next time.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
In wild country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.